Next man up, 102.5 The Game, hour number two on this Tuesday. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. We talked Titans in the first hour. We'll get back to the two-tone blue, but did want to cross over to college football. Vanderbilt, the number 9 team in the country, getting ready to take on Texas on the road this weekend. And a win would set them up to just have to beat Auburn and Kentucky to get to 10 wins and likely a college football playoff spot. Now, we've been saying for months, in fact, you hear it in the intro every single hour, 10 wins is an SEC school you're in. Is that true? Because that's kind of the assumption that I've made in my head is if Vandy gets to 10 wins, they're going to play in the playoff. But I was told yesterday that that may not be as true as I think. So I wanted to actually go through and see what the math looks like for a 10-2 Vanderbilt team and what they would need to happen in order to earn a bid to the college football playoff. So I know Parker has some thoughts on this. He's been working on the All-State playoff predictor from ESPN. So we'll get Parker's thoughts too. But just looking at bids that we know are going to happen, at least we're 90% sure at the least. Of course, you're getting a group of five. Likely the winner of the American is in. The winner of the ACC is in. The winner of the Big 12 is in. You're getting three from the Big 10. I feel pretty safe saying Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon are all going to be in. So that's six. The SEC is going to get a champion, and I would say you're looking at the teams ahead of Vandy in the AP poll right now. A&M, Bama, Ole Miss, Georgia. Feel decent about them. So that puts you at 10. Notre Dame is a wild card because if they win out, they go 10-2. They'd be the 11. And then I guess you have to make the point of if it's 10-2 Tennessee, 10-2 Vanderbilt, but Tennessee beat Vanderbilt, then Tennessee would get that bid. So I understand the thought of, yes, in that scenario where all of those teams win the rest of their games and you got, you know, three 11-1 SEC teams and maybe a 10-2 Alabama or something like that, and Notre Dame's 10-2, and Tennessee beats you and you're both 10-2, I can see a scenario where Vandy gets left out. But is that the most likely scenario that every team in playoff contention is going to win out from here on?
Like, probably not.
That's probably not. Yes, that is where I was looking at it is, okay, I guess maybe I have to look and say, okay, in this exact scenario where Vandy's only loss the rest of the year comes at Tennessee and all these other teams that are fighting run the table. Like, Ole Miss's schedule's pretty easy, right? Getting through Oklahoma was big for them. Their last four games, South Carolina at home, the Citadel, Florida at home.
They have a tough game at the end of the year.
And then the Egg Bowl in Starkville.
It's a tough game.
It always is. Yep. One of the greatest rivalries in sports.
Should be on Thanksgiving, by the way. Just putting that out there.
Yeah, I agree.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
That should be Thanksgiving night.
I like eating turkey sandwich with a lot of gravy on it and falling asleep to cowbells.
Watching the Egg Bowl.
It's like Christmas 2.0.
It's a tradition unlike any other. For Alabama, you've got a lot of home games as well. Three straight home games after the bye week. LSU, Oklahoma, Eastern Illinois. That's a tough one. And then at Auburn in the Iron Bowl. So if I'm looking right now, I think Ole Miss, Alabama, both in safely. Texas A&M is an interesting one because they are undefeated, and that gives them a lot of leeway, and I think I would safely put them in. But you do play at Missouri. Who knows who their quarterback is going to be? Probably Zollers. Pribula, I think, is out for a while at least, even though not quite as serious as we thought initially. South Carolina at home, Samford at Texas. So let's put those three in. I think that's pretty safe. Georgia. This is where I wanted to look because Georgia plays Georgia Tech at the end of the year. And I think if you're looking at this exact scenario, because this scenario goes away if Vandy loses to Texas but wins their last three, because then Tennessee would be knocked out, and I think Vandy would be safely in. But Georgia plays Georgia Tech at the end of the year. That one could end up being a huge game for everybody else in the playoff field because Georgia still has a couple of tough games left. They play Florida, who That one's in – or actually, that's the world's biggest cocktail party. So I feel good about Georgia winning that one. At Mississippi State, who's been frisky. Texas, eh.
Yeah.
But if they lose one of those games and then have to play Georgia Tech in Atlanta, maybe they lose that game and they're out. Like, that's basically for Vandy to not get in as a 10-2 team, I think everybody else would have to run the table.
What if Georgia Tech goes 10-2? Say they lose to Georgia and they go to the ACC championship
and
game.
And lose.
And they lose because the committee said, yeah, we're not going to put conference championship games in the factor for this.
That's interesting because that happened with SMU last year.
Right.
And it was a 9-3 Alabama team that they left out. But that is an interesting point as well. What if Georgia Tech is 11-2 with their second loss being in the ACC championship game and their only other loss is to Georgia? Yeah. And that's why, you know, maybe I was premature saying it's almost a lock at 10-2, but I find it hard to believe that every other team competing is going to just win out. There's chaos in college football all the time.
Here's the tricky part about Georgia Tech is they play Pitt before they play Georgia. And Pitt is a trap game because Pitt is better than a lot of people give them credit for. They have a guy by the name of Desmond Reed, who is a first-team All-American. And then that's a look-ahead spot because you could just look past Pitt.
That is true.
To Georgia. So that's a trap game. Then if they win that, lose to Georgia, what if they do lose the ACC championship game? I don't think the ACC is a two-bid league this year.
I don't think so either. And it could work out if you get 11-1 Miami against 11-1 Georgia Tech in the ACC championship game. It gets hard to leave either of those teams out. So that could be a wrench in Vandy's playoff hopes.
Here's another wrench. Go to the Big 12. Texas Tech goes and wins out. They only have one loss in their schedule.
And BYU as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on, but I still think with the strength of schedule for Vanderbilt at 10-2, I think they are in. And a lot of times, these things have a way of sorting themselves out, right? Like, we look at it right now and say, all of these teams could be in. There's 20 teams that could be in, but we saw it a couple weeks ago. Like, Miami and Texas Tech look to be cruising, and they both hit bumps in the road against unranked teams. Like, it happens all the time, and Vandy could very well be the team to hit a road bump, right? Like, they could drop a game against Auburn that they're not expecting to. But I think if we're just saying purely in the hypothetical that Vandy is 10-2 with their only other loss being at Tennessee, that's a tough resume to leave out of the playoffs. You got 10 wins. You got road wins at South Carolina, at Texas, at Virginia Tech. You've got home wins against LSU and Missouri, and your only losses would be against other playoff teams on the road, right? Because in that scenario, Tennessee would be in, Alabama would be in.
Correct.
I don't know if you can leave Vanderbilt out there, even if it's against a 11-1 Miami whose loss is against Louisville at home. Right?
Yeah. You can't leave him out. Yeah, no, absolutely not. And I also looked at this percentage factor, the plays per efficiency on ESPN's FPI ranking. Vandy ranks 7th in the nation out of all these teams in the top 25.
Yeah.
I think if you're the committee, you also put that into factor of things because if you're looking at TV rights and so forth, you want to have a good product out there.
Right.
And I think a lot of people are like, let's look at the efficiency numbers. This team puts up a lot of numbers. They're going to draw a lot of eyeballs to the screen.
Well, and the point I also make is it's made for TV, and everybody's going to make the point of, oh, Vandy's not going to get in because they don't want to have Vandy in the playoffs. I think TV wants Diego Pavia in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
I think if there is an excuse to get Diego Pavia in, I think they're going to do it. And I saw a projection earlier this week of one corner of the bracket would be Indiana getting a bye with Indiana taking on the winner of Vanderbilt and Georgia Tech. Like, crazy stuff in college football. DP on the YouTube chat, big Vandy fan, I see, says Vandy will go ahead and win out, so there is no question. And, you know, that is an important point to make, is that Vanderbilt still controls their own destiny no matter what. You're 11-1. They're probably hosting a playoff game.
Right.
But just for the sake of conversation, 10-2, I think, is the dividing line. Like, last year, 9-3 in the SEC gave you a chance to get in. Not this year. And DP also makes an important point of, in order to get to this scenario, Tennessee would have to win out to get to that game against Vanderbilt. You got to beat Oklahoma. You got to beat Florida in the Swamp. If they drop one, Tennessee's eliminated, and it's all null and void. So that's the point that I'm trying to make is, yes, if Vandy gets to 10-2 and everybody else who's competing for a playoff spot takes care of their business too, then sure, there's a chance that Vandy gets left on the outside looking in. But I just find it hard to believe that no one else is going to slip up for the rest of the year.
A lot has to happen for Vandy not to be in the playoffs.
Yes.
Not a lot has to happen for Vandy to be in the playoffs.
Yes.
And that's a good thing to have.
Vandy needs to go 3-1 and just get a little bit of help. Notre Dame slip up, drop a game. Tennessee slip up, drop a game. The ACC beat each other up a little bit. That you just need a little bit of help if you get to 10-2. So I would say 11-1, 100% chance you're in. 10-2, I'll go 90% chance.
Yeah.
You need a little bit of help.
And also, you look at this as well, the Big 12 I mentioned earlier with a lot of one-loss teams. Cincinnati takes on Utah this weekend, I believe. You have Texas Tech taking on another, I think BYU is what it is. If those teams can kind of cannibalize each other, that helps out Vandy.
That's what the SEC has been doing this year, is they've been beating each other up. Like, Oklahoma looked like they were in a good spot to make the playoff. They lose to Texas. They lose to Ole Miss. Now their back's against the wall. You got an elimination game in Neyland this weekend. Loser of that game is out. So there's a lot of football left to be played. But Vanderbilt has four games left to try and punch their ticket. And I think that's all you can ask for at this point in the year. Nevada Josh says, Vandy is going to smoke Texas. You heard it here first. So we'll see this weekend down in Austin.
Look, I'm going to say this right now. Texas is a whole different team under their backup quarterback. I think Arch Manning.
Are you saying good or bad?
They're good. Excuse me. I say they're bad. I'm sorry.
No. Are you saying they're better without Arch Manning?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, I guess my words are not great this morning. Sorry.
Well, no,
about
you
that.
Said they're a whole different team. I didn't know if you meant in a good or a bad way.
Yeah, I meant to emphasize that. They're a better team without Arch Manning. I mean, we saw it against Mississippi State. Obviously, that fourth quarter allowing 17-point deficit in some aspects. They go win in overtime.
Yeah.
It only took one pass. It took one pass for Texas to say, you know what? This game's over with.
Preseason Heisman favorite. Now is addition by subtraction when he's out of the lineup.
His grandfather was right. He's going to stay another year, man.
I think he is. Yeah. I think that's a pretty safe bet. He's in concussion protocol this week, so we'll see if he's going to be able to play on Saturday against Vanderbilt. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Parker went through the playoff predictor, and I want to get his thoughts on this situation coming up next. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly alongside you. Talking college football playoff. We are a month away from the final regular season game of the college football season. Crazy how fast this season always flies by. But we are getting into crunch time. Lots of teams vying for those 12 playoff spots. Vanderbilt is one of them, currently the number 9 team in the country. We're just going through some playoff math. What bids are already kind of locked up? You feel good about three Big Ten teams and, of course, a champion from the ACC, the Big 12, and the Group of Five. So that would leave you with 6 spots for the SEC and at-large, right? So you look at 6 spots, the SEC... Possible they get all 6 of them, likely more like 4 or 5. Who could those teams be? And if Vanderbilt gets to 10-2, would it be them? We think yes. You know, you'd need a couple of other results to go your way if you're 10-2. But in college football, there's always a little bit of chaos. And Parker Kelly was going through the playoff predictor. I wanted to get his insights on how this may all sort out over the next 4 weeks.
Okay, so I asked the question yesterday. Would a 10-2 Vandy team make the college football playoff? And surprisingly, there were a lot of people who bashed me for asking the question. So I went to the good old handy All-State playoff predictor on ESPN, and I just looked, and this is all hypothetical. If Vanderbilt were to be 10-1 by the time they got to Knoxville and they lost to the Vols, they would be 10-2. So I went to the playoff predictor. I put that in. Not only would they be favored to make the playoff, they would have a 96% chance to make the playoff, but they would have a 69% chance to host a first-round game. So not only would they make the playoff, but they would be favored to host as well.
Yeah, I see that now. I just plugged in what you had, and this has Vanderbilt with a 96% chance to make the playoff, a 7% chance at a first-round bye, 69% chance to host the first round. In this scenario, it has Vanderbilt as the 7 seed in this out of 200,000 simulations or whatever, Vanderbilt is the 7 seed taking on Texas Tech in this simulation. This also has Tennessee getting in. So in this scenario from ESPN, you've got Alabama, Texas A&M, Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, and Tennessee, and Georgia. So they've got 6 SEC teams in, which, unlikely, I would say. I would probably set the over-under at 4.5.
Yeah.
Does that sound about right?
6 is too beefy.
But that's very – I had not used this playoff predictor before. It's very helpful. Yeah, so 96% chance to make the playoff if they go 10-2. Feels pretty safe to me. And we said 90% chance. I think 96 sounds about right to me, too. Right now, it has them with a 44% chance to make the playoff, but I would assume that would go up exponentially if you beat Texas this weekend.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that Vanderbilt would host. I disagree with that. I think they'd make the playoff.
I agree.
But I don't think they'd host.
I think 10-2 gets you to probably the 10 seed, right? Like, I think that's probably where you end up. You're ahead of the Group of Five champion, maybe ahead of the Big 12 champion, but Vandy would probably be at 10-2, one of the last 2 at-large teams in, if you're 10-2. But you're still in. And for Vanderbilt, who was laughed at when they said that they wanted to go to the college football playoff this year, 10-2, I will say this, 10-2 at the very least makes you have a watch party.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Like that?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the dividing line of, like, did you put yourself in a position to have a watch party feeling like you're going to get into the playoff? And no one wants to be Florida State and sit there and watch you get left out. But that's kind of where the way I look at it is, do you feel good enough about your playoff chances to sit down and have everybody together with a camera from ESPN on you? I think 10-2 is a for sure yes that they're having that situation.
Yeah, you just hope that second game they lose is not by a big margin, because you mentioned it a few weeks back, Jake, when I was on with you on a Tuesday. It was, I believe you mentioned saying that a lot of these games played in November mean a lot more than they do when it was in August.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you have a game where you lose by 3 scores, that's going to play a bigger factor than it did in August.
Yeah, recency bias shouldn't be a factor in selection, but it is. It really is. Alabama, no one's going to remember the Florida State loss if they go 11-1, even though that may end up being one of the worst losses among playoff contenders, right? Like, Florida State's been horrible this year. No one's going to remember that if Alabama wins their other 11 games heading into the playoff. They might, at that point, they might be the top overall seed if they go win the SEC. But if Vanderbilt loses to Tennessee in the last game of the season and the last data point you have is Vandy dropping that game, that could sway the committee's mind one way or the other.
Now, say Alabama, you mentioned Alabama real quick, say they lose another game, say it's to Oklahoma or Auburn, the Iron Bowl at the end of the year. Does that put them at the bottom of the totem pole with those 10-2 teams?
It's a good question.
Because then you now have to factor that Florida State game in there.
It does help Alabama that Florida State's a non-conference game, because if you're 7-1, you'd still have a chance to get into the SEC title game, and you control your own destiny at that point. But I do agree with you that if you're stacking up 10-2 resumes, Alabama having that loss would hurt them against certain teams. If it's Alabama versus Vanderbilt, we have a head-to-head result. If it's Alabama versus Tennessee, we have a head-to-head result. So Alabama would get the edge there. But if it's Alabama-Ole Miss, and they're both 10-2, and one of them has a loss to Florida State, and let's say Ole Miss's losses are to Georgia, and their schedule's pretty easy. Georgia and
Georgia,
Mississippi State, maybe at the end of the year. I don't know.
Or that, Georgia Tech.
That would be an interesting conversation to have, because that Florida State loss isn't good, but obviously Alabama's wins over Georgia, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, I guess they came back against South Carolina.
Yep.
Like, all those wins are going to help them in that process as well.
Yeah, I'm looking at Georgia's schedule right now. They have Texas left on their schedule, Charlotte, Georgia Tech, Mississippi State, Florida. So, like, it could slip up, but, you know.
Probably not.
Probably not.
But that is an interesting conversation to have, because that loss probably is one of the worst among these playoff contenders. How do you rate that when it comes to judging these teams? The good news for Alabama is if you're being compared against the other SEC teams, you do have that
head-to-head result, which I think that should always be the deciding factor.
It should value more than that, yeah.
Like, hey, if you're deciding that two of three between, Alabama, Ole Miss, and Georgia get in, it's like, well, Alabama beat Georgia, Georgia beat Ole Miss. There you go.
Yeah.
But I hate that because it's like Ole Miss didn't get a chance to play Alabama, but, you know, you do have to – you have to take the results on the field and actually care about them, right? Like, the games have to matter.
Yeah, and normally when Ole Miss were to play Alabama in this scenario, like, they normally have to play Alabama to get in. And for this case, like, they don't have the opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
And normally that's Lane Kiffin's, you know, taking care of his destiny in a roundabout way, but not this year.
Lots of football to sort out. This is a huge weekend coming up. Vanderbilt, I would argue they're in the driver's seat, but you could get even further if you can beat Texas this weekend, because then you come home with a chance to win two games against a one win in the SEC Auburn team, a winless in the SEC Kentucky team, and boom, you've got 10 wins. This is a huge week for Vanderbilt. Tennessee, elimination game against Oklahoma, Josh Heupel's alma mater. Like, can you pull it off again and keep your playoff hopes alive? Because if you get through this one, you start to feel pretty good about heading into that Thanksgiving matchup, weekend of Thanksgiving matchup against Vanderbilt with 9 wins.
I don't know.
It's a big one.
It's a big one.
Tennessee, Oklahoma on Saturday. That is the night game on ABC, 6:30 from Neyland Stadium. Vanderbilt and Texas, they get going at 11 a.m. Both the in-state teams need a win bad this weekend. We'll see how it all works out. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly with you on this Tuesday. When we come back, we'll get back into the Titans. Head coaching candidates are being thrown out here left and right. I want to organize our thoughts. I want to see where Nick Frazier stands on some of these top candidates, and I kind of want to know where I stand, because when I put them all together, it's kind of splitting hairs for some of these guys, but the Titans are going to have some tough decisions to make when they start interviewing guys over the next couple of months. We'll talk about head coaching candidates coming up next. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly with you. Talking some college football to start the hour. Vanderbilt, number 9 in the country, trying to reach the college football playoff. They'll take on Texas this weekend. Tennessee, just on the outskirts of the playoff field right now, they will face Oklahoma on Saturday night. But let's transition back to the Tennessee Titans. Titans have the head coaching vacancy, currently the only one in the NFL. And I'm sure that's going to change very shortly, although it doesn't seem like it's going to be a crowded market this year. Right? Like, I look at it, I say the Dolphins are going to fire Mike McDaniel. Maybe the Giants fire Daboll. I know he entered the year on maybe one of the hottest seats ever to start a season. It was basically like, you better win this year or you're out. And yeah, they've shown some promise, but they're still 2-6. Other coaches that could be on their way out, there's really not a ton. Stefanski, maybe, if Cleveland gets a little tired there.
I could see it because, like, that team's going nowhere. They're dysfunctional like the Titans, so maybe a breath of fresh air somewhere else helps them. But
there's been rumors about Harbaugh, too, and I doubt it. John Harbaugh, that is. I doubt it that the Ravens are going to move on after one injury-plagued season.
Like, if you look at John Harbaugh and that Baltimore Ravens team, if you have one bad season, you have good draft capital to really do something with it, and you just add to what you already have. I think that's – obviously, you know, that's 1 year less of Derrick Henry and stuff, but, like, you got to look at it that way, where you can look at the optimistic mindset of it.
Right. And there are a couple others that are probably on the bubble. Are Kellen Moore and Aaron Glenn one and done? I would doubt it. I don't think they're going to fire them after 1 year. Raheem Morris is kind of the seats warming up. I mean, you gotten blown out by the Panthers and the Dolphins this year. You're 3-4, but that has to count for something, that you're not competitive against teams that are not very good. And then Jonathan Gannon in Arizona would be interesting. But that's what? Tops 5, 6, and I would guess less than that openings this year. So it's not like the Titans are going to have a ton of competition for these candidates. And there's been a ton that have been thrown out by us, by texters, by media fans, everybody. And I have 5 that I think have been the most widely suggested for the Titans. And I want to see your rankings 1 through 5. So I'm going to list these off. Should we do these blind rankings? No. That wouldn't be, I mean, that wouldn't give us the result that we're looking for. I'll read them off. Mike McCarthy, former head coach of the Packers and the Cowboys. Matt Nagy, former head coach of the Bears, current offensive coordinator of the Chiefs. Cliff Kingsbury, former head coach of the Cardinals, current offensive coordinator with the Arizona Cardinals. Arthur Smith, former head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, also former OC with the Titans, now with Pittsburgh. And then Robert Saleh, former Jets head coach, now with San Francisco. But I will put the disclaimer here of Saleh includes a Mike McDaniel offensive coordinator as well, because that's been a suggestion that's been thrown out there a ton. So,
right.
Where do you stand on these guys? Who would you say out of that group of five is your favorite option for the Titans?
Again, I'm sticking to my guns here. I said this 2 weeks ago. I think I was one of the first ones to say it. I like Robert Saleh. Obviously, we talked about it off the air that he's probably good enough to just be a defensive coordinator. But I think for the Titans' sake, the direction they're in right now, they need a defensive-minded coach.
I could see it.
I mean, this is a team where we talked about earlier in the show. They have so many holes on that defense to where they need somebody that has a defensive mind that knows what to do to think three steps ahead. That's the guy right there. I think Robert Saleh is the guy. Would I sacrifice a Mike McDaniel offense?
I mean, I think Mike McDaniel would be a fine coordinator. Like, you see the play calling that he does in Miami, lots of creativity, and I think he could mold Cam Ward well. But, you know, he hasn't been fired yet, first of all. And we don't know what Saleh and McDaniel's relationship is. Yes, they did work together in San Francisco, but it's making an assumption to guess that Saleh's hired, Mike McDaniel would be his coordinator. But that has been the package deal that a lot of people have discussed.
Yeah, and you have to go back and look at history and see what that roster was constructed as to see who the quarterback was and so forth, all that. But, like, I look at this Robert Saleh idea would be great for the Titans, probably because of defense. But then you look at Cliff Kingsbury and the success he's had in the NFL, especially with the Commanders.
Yeah.
And that's primarily been because he's revolved his offense around the quarterback. It's been, you know, even it's Marcus Mariota or Jaden Daniels. Both of those guys, like last night, I thought Marcus had a really good game, minus the fact they lost 28-7. I thought he played pretty well. You can't knock him for the interception in the first quarter off Debo Samuel's helmet. You can't knock him for that. But I thought a lot of the curated runs that he had were smart. It was smart adjustments. And I think Cliff Kingsbury has done well with whatever quarterback he's had in the NFL, adjusting to their play skill. And I think when you look at Cam Ward, that's something that you need to see in your next offensive coordinator is to curate around Cam Ward.
Yeah, including your favorite guy, Kyler Murray.
Hey.
That partnership with
Cliff
Kingsbury.
5 foot nothing, baby. That kid's something else.
See, I wouldn't mind Saleh. I think that could end up being the right move. If you need to build a culture,
correct,
first of all. Like, that is, yes, you want a guy who's going to come in and develop Cam Ward, but I think culture building and leadership should be the first priority. A guy who's going to come in and, I've said it plenty of times, isn't going to be learning on the job. Guy who comes in and he is going to command that room from the second he opens the door. Hey, this stops now. We are not going to be the laughing stock of the league anymore. We're going to start turning this around. Saleh could be that guy.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of people look at Robert Saleh and knock him for the time he had in New York with Aaron Rodgers. I think he got a bad rap for that. It was just an unfortunate event. I think Rodgers kind of dictated a lot of that team, and Saleh didn't have much say on that. And plus, the team was kind of injury-riddled near the latter end of that year.
Yeah.
So then that's kind of what led to his departure and trying to figure out where he needed to go next.
I agree. Saleh didn't get much of a fair shake with the Jets. I also wonder if, you know, I'm sure he realizes how dysfunctional the Jets franchise was. Does he sign up for another franchise that is looking like it has a lot of dysfunction going on?
I mean,
I don't know.
Here's the deal. Robert Saleh, and there's something that lines up well with what I'm about to say. Robert Saleh has direction. From what we've seen and heard about Mike Borgonzi, seems to have direction.
Yeah.
That's two things that Titans fans should be very happy about. Direction, transparency. I think that's something those two bring to the table. As for Chad Brinker, just leave that off to the side.
Wish we could.
Yeah.
You mentioned Cliff Kingsbury. We've got Joe in the YouTube chat who is very high on Cliff Kingsbury. I mean, I get it. He is a creative offensive mind. He did have success with the Cardinals at times. It obviously didn't end well. And he developed Jaden Daniels last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jaden Daniels with maybe, likely the greatest rookie quarterback season of all time, getting the Commanders to the NFC Championship game. It's really impressive. I wouldn't hate Cliff Kingsbury, but I think I would go with the three that we haven't mentioned yet above those two. I like Saleh. I really do. I do think that Mike McCarthy would be my favorite still. Yeah. I've stuck by that since they fired Callahan, even before they fired Callahan. I just, the proven winner, and I just don't think you have to worry about any kind of dysfunction or incompetency within that program. Like, he's going to come in and know what he's doing. He's going to hire coaches who know what they're doing. I would feel good with Mike McCarthy that this isn't going to be a complete mess like it has been the last couple of years. And I think that's probably just, you know, wanting to swing it back from Callahan. It's like, all right, well, Callahan was a first-time head coach. Let's go get a two-time head coach to be the next guy. But I wouldn't hate Nagy or Smith either. Honestly, all five of those names, if that ends up being, if we see the tweet from Ian Rappaport in January of the Titans are hiring any of those five guys as the head coach, I think that's a good hire. Any of those five guys.
Yeah, I think if I had to go one through five, number five on that list for me would be Matt Nagy.
I could see that.
I mean, all the other guys have more of a higher pedigree, in my opinion. I think Nagy, sure, he gets a bad rap from time to time, but sure. This is a good, solid five list. I think one name that was left off and probably won't get another head coaching job, or maybe he might, I don't know, Brian Flores. I think he has a really good job with structuring together a really good defense.
I agree.
Got a really good buy-in in Miami when he was there. Just unfortunate. So
the baggage there is the question mark.
Right.
And it is tough to say, like, oh, he's suing the league. Is he going to go take a head coaching job? I don't know. But I do agree. Robert Flores, if you're looking for a defensive guy in the same vein as Robert Saleh, Flores would certainly be in there too. Joe in the YouTube chat says, playing too safe with McCarthy, in my opinion. And that may be a good point. That may be true. I think safe is a good option. I want high floor head coach here, yeah. Right? Like, if you want high ceiling, you go with Joe Brady, who, yeah, first-time head coach, maybe it is a disaster, but he also could be Sean McVay. Like, that's
true.
That's your high floor, low ceiling, or opposite, high ceiling, low floor pick. I think Mike McCarthy is you know what you're getting. It is safe, but you're able to go in with some structure into next season instead of hoping that somebody who maybe hasn't been successful as an NFL head coach or hasn't done it before is going to immediately turn things around.
Yeah, and under Mike McCarthy, if that were to be the case, there are a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot, but there's probably a handful of guys that are in the free agent market right now that have played under McCarthy that he knows he can get this X amount of potential out of them.
Yeah.
Or if it's a veteran player, I know I can get this amount at least out of this guy. So maybe that's another way of reorganizing that culture that the Tides are trying to build from the bottom up. I mean, I'm still on the solid train primarily because he's a guy that can bring grit defensively. And I think if you can establish grit and culture defensively, it just oozes to the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, it's just about when Robert Saleh walks in the door, just like Brian Callahan, we need a depth chart of all of the coaches you want to hire. Better get every number one option.
Do you think it's less than 27 people on staff?
27?
Yeah. That's how many is on the Titans staff at the start of the season.
Well, and I saw yesterday the report that they extended all of Brian Callahan's assistants last year,
yeah.
Which I don't know, was it only a two-year deal for those guys when they signed up? Because I understand in all of sports, you never want somebody coaching on their last year of their deal.
Right.
So I'd have to read the article a little bit closer, but
I'd assume
it's a little bit like all those guys are going to be gone, and now Amy Adams Strunk not only paying three GMs, she's going to be paying two head coaches and two full coaching staffs next year.
That's bad. I pulled up a tweet earlier. I was talking to you about this before the show. I think it was minus the Derrick Henry era. It was somewhere on Twitter that the Titans were 7-and this was 2 weeks ago, so 7-34, and minus the NFL revenue sharing, that's $440 million, they were working at a negative $350 million a season. Like, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's not.
According to Twitter.
Right, and, you know, the revenue sharing obviously saves you.
Correct.
Because every NFL team gets a large chunk of money, $400 million plus. But, yeah, I mean, it's not good.
No, it goes to show you they need some change, for sure.
You know, we'll talk about it on the other side. We brought up the point yesterday of, could this be the emptiest game in Nissan Stadium history? Like, the more I think about it, there might be, like, 15,000 people in that stadium on Sunday.
Maybe less.
It's going to be bad. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans head coaching candidates and much more. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game. Next man up, 1025 The Game. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly with you on this Tuesday, wrapping up hour number two. Talking Titans, as they have the only head coaching opening currently in the NFL. Lots of names being thrown out. We talked about some of the most popular names that have been linked to the Titans. Mike McCarthy, Arthur Smith, Matt Nagy, Robert Saleh, Cliff Kingsbury. All good options, all bring different things to the table. Let's go to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Dylan is on the line wanting to chime in. Dylan, thanks for calling. What you got for us?
Hey, guys. Yes, I just want to talk to you for a second about this. So, I feel like the most important thing that we should be looking for is someone who can navigate a rebuild. So if you think Robert Saleh, he was put in charge of the Jets to try to rebuild that franchise, and it did not go well. If you bring in someone like Joe Brady, I feel like you're setting the team up and that coach up for failure. I mean, he's going to be a first-time head coach, and he is going to have just – overwhelming pressure to try and, you know, turn the franchise around. And I would feel good with him if he brings in the right people to surround himself with, but we don't know if he's going to do that or not. So I feel like it's going to be a lot on his plate, the same way Callahan was kind of overwhelmed his first year. And then you look at McCarthy, and I feel like he's always had a really good quarterback for really good franchises. I mean, Packers and Cowboys, those are two of the best franchises ever, and they've always been surrounded with talent and good structure at the top. And so I feel like it's just kind of hard to try and pick and choose when the main thing is navigating a rebuild. And so I just want to hear what you guys have to say about that.
That's a good point, Dylan. Thanks for the call. I do agree with you that you don't want somebody who is a first-time head coach having to come into this tough situation where the leash probably isn't going to be all that long to try and at least get things heading in the right direction. And a first-time head coach, we saw it with Callahan, sometimes it takes a year to, you know, not feel like you're drowning. And then, who knows, maybe you can't even figure it out then, like we saw with Brian this year. So I think head coaching experience is big. And you make a good point with Mike McCarthy that he did step into some decent situations with the Packers and the Cowboys. Maybe you do go with a Cliff Kingsbury, who Cliff has been in a very similar situation. He took that Cardinals job with the number one overall pick. They took Kyler Murray. And again, I'm not saying Kyler Murray is Patrick Mahomes, but he's been through this situation before of trying to turn a bad team into a decent team, and he got the Cardinals to the playoffs. Maybe that's a plus for bringing in Kingsbury.
If you were to bring in Cliff Kingsbury, it's more of Cliff Kingsbury saying, what can you do for me? Because why should he leave Washington?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he has the weapons in that offense to say, I'm set here. What can you do for me to attract me to come to Nashville?
Yeah, it's similar to the Ben Johnson situation from last year of like, or 2 years ago with the Commanders, right, where it was like, hey, I don't have to leave. You've got to make it attractive to me to leave because I like my situation here. I still don't think I'd put Kingsbury at the top of the list. I really like Arthur Smith. I still think McCarthy would be my number one, and I agree with the YouTube chat that maybe it's just the safe pick that's attractive to me, but I do like Arthur Smith. I think he never had any good quarterback play in Atlanta, and we've seen what he can do as a play caller. He knows the organization. He's clearly well-liked within the organization. If I had to guess who it is going to be, not who I want it to be, but who it is going to be right now, I think it's going to be Arthur Smith.
That's fair. I mean, Chasen McJoe, Joe especially, has been on this Arthur Smith train to the point where I'm like, all right, I get it. Arthur Smith, okay. But it makes sense because you allude to it. This guy knows this system. He knows the front office. Everybody knows him on a first name basis. Probably still lives here in some aspects. I don't know. But you got to look at it from that point. But the only issue I have, and you just mentioned it, about the quarterback situation, can he develop a quarterback?
Yes.
Because obviously he's been in the bad situations of not having a good quarterback, but can he develop a good quarterback?
Yeah.
And that's one thing you got to worry about with Cam Ward.
That is definitely a question. I think that would be a large part of the interview for Arthur Smith. What gives you confidence that you can turn Cam Ward into a franchise quarterback? And I if I had to guess who it's going to be, I think it's going to be Arthur Smith. I think they like the familiarity, and I think he would take some ownership in it, not just because of being with the Titans for as long as he was, but also because I think there's a chip on his shoulder to prove that, hey, I'm not what the results showed in Atlanta. I can be a good head coach in this league.
And right now we're talking about how we're all enamored into Arthur Smith, but let's remember, we're forgetting about the defense right now with all the holes they have to fill. You're not going to fix it all in one offseason. It takes multiple years. Can Arthur Smith be a part of that process of obviously won't be selecting those defensive players, but he is the head coach, so he's going to have some say in some of those guys.
Yeah.
So is that another aspect of where you say, Art, can you think you can help us out with some of these guys? You think this might be a good fit here and there? And that's where he solely relies on a defensive coordinator. Is Denard Wilson the guy going forward for the Titans?
Right.
That, I mean, all that's up in the air. It then comes down to, should Arthur Smith bring in his own defensive coordinator?
Right. And I know TD has been advocating for whoever the head coach is, keep Denard Wilson on, try and keep Bones Fossil on. That would definitely be something to talk about when they go through the interview process of who would you want to bring in on your staff, because there's got to be some experience and guys who can come in and immediately start to develop this young roster, because you can see the flashes, you can see the potential from Ward and DK and Iamanner and even Kevin Winston when he's been out there, and Femi showed some flat. Like, you can see with the young guys, there's talent. Can you get the most out of them? And that's going to be the task of this next coaching staff. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Nevada Josh says, let's hire the Hasselbecks.
Hey, they're doing really good.
They're right
job
down the road.
Innsworth's pretty darn good, if you ask me.
No moving costs as well. Matt says, I think Nagy would be my first choice outside of McCarthy. When you talk about building something and overachieving, what he did in Chicago is actually pretty impressive. Yeah, I've said it before. I think Matt Nagy gets a little bit of a bad rap for the way things ended in Chicago, but he did have a 12-win season with the Bears.
Yeah.
One season doesn't make a coach great, but there was at least some signs of success from Matt Nagy when he was with the Bears. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. I mentioned we're going to talk about the possible crowd on Sunday, and I want to get to that coming up next, because I am not exaggerating when I think this might be the worst crowd in Nissan Stadium history. And it's not just because of the Titans. Chargers just don't have fans either. We'll talk about it coming up next. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game.